Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and joining me right now from Traverse City, Jason Allen, who is a Republican candidate for the 1st Congressional District. Jason, welcome to Copper Country Today.
Thank you very much. And my first question, do you think we're related?
No, there is no relation.
our clan was from, they immigrated, probably like yours did, but we came from Pennsylvania and Indiana.
I have family that is originally from here, and we date back to the 1800s.
Wow.
So though I was not born and raised here, I returned here.
Sure.
And so I always like to at least say, I'm Cornish, we invented the pasty, and I'm not a transplant. So
wonderful. That's great.
But Houghton is not an area you make it to very often.
Sure.
So welcome, and talk about your tour that you're taking right now.
So the 1st Congressional District is the second largest congressional district east of the Mississippi. It runs from a little town north of Ludington on the Lincoln River. It goes to Harrisville, which is over south of Alpena, and then everything north. And it's a very, very wonderful, rich, diverse area. And so we've been traveling those counties, trying to at least make one stop in every county as part of our announcement/tour through the area. And it's been great. A little snow, a little challenging sometimes, but what an amazing area. And the ability to go out and meet people, chat, get some understanding.
Now, those that may not be familiar with your background, of course, we know that you served in the state Senate mm-hmm. as a state senator, but let's just make sure everybody knows, who we are and where you come from.
I grew up in Traverse City. Our family owns a men's clothing store in downtown. We've been there for 50 years. It is a traditional men's clothing store, so former Governor Milliken is a 41 regular, 15 and a half, 33. The late Senator Griffin was usually a 40 regular, sleeves up a half inch to an inch, and he was a 15 and a half, 32. And so we grew up in a traditional men's apparel store. We sell sport coats, suits, Boy Scout uniforms, and Mom and Dad started that. My dad was a junior executive with Montgomery Wards, and so we started that in the mid-60s and worked in that the apparel business my entire life, still back selling shirts and ties during the holidays and other times of the year. Eagle Scout and also very active in the scouting program today, helping on a regional basis and a statewide basis. And that's been an area that I've always been a passionate about because it's developing the next generation of young men and women to move our nation forward. Served in the Army National Guard, was a tanker on an M60A3 crew for 5 years and then did 1 year in public affairs. Was on a driver loader gunner on a M60A3, so cross-chained there, drilled out of Camp Grayling and Kalkaska, to a certain extent in the Cadillac Armory. Spent time in local government, spent time in state government, as we talked about, and then the last 5 years have been involved in the service as an appointment by the governor, working on Veterans Affairs. Was intimately involved in running the Jacobetti Home for a couple years, and then as the department got up and running under Governor Snyder, my official title was Senior Policy Advisor. And we had met late earlier in the year when we were up doing some veterans outreach. And so what you know about Michigan and Michigan's Upper Peninsula is that about 10% of the population in Upper Michigan and someplace north of Clare are veterans. I think a little over 30,000 in the Upper Peninsula, about 60,000 below are veterans. We have a very robust population. And so we've spent time reorganizing, making sure that veterans get their benefits. We were one of a few states in the union that weren't certified, so we worked with the VA to get certification so that we could actually file claims. We then set up a strategy and a team under Governor Snyder to get veteran services up and running and making sure that the men and women that served in our nation were able to get access to care. We've come a long way. We still have a long way to go.
Yeah, one of the more depressing things that I hear about our veterans care is that we have we're one of the most underutilized areas where so there's a lot of services available, but for whatever reason, either it's red tape or perceived red tape, those services aren't often used and taken advantage of.
Rick, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I think when you look at that situation is that what we have found going to senior citizen meal sites, going to churches, going to places where there are people maybe in poverty, that there's a lack of awareness. And there are a lot of different benefits, some dating back to the Lincoln administration, for elderly widows, disability ratings that go for so many of our veterans that may have served in World War II or Korea that they're unaware of. And so our job was to become a central coordinating point. And, you know, when you look at the numbers on federal reimbursement, we were below places in Guam and Puerto Rico. We've made strides. But, you know, how do you get people that may be accessing care through another poverty agency, accessing assistance, to be aware of the benefits for veterans? And so that's been a passion of the governor's, passion of mine. We've made progress. We still have a long way to go.
An issue that has come up several times in the realm of veterans' issues is the cemetery. We've been hearing about it for years, that the Upper Peninsula doesn't have a veteran cemetery, that families have to drive all the way downstate, sometimes 10, 12 hours, to be able to go to visit the cemetery. Any perceived movement on that coming up, or is that something that you'll take?
I am very concerned about that. The question gets into is that the governor did not want to have the administrative oversight of that. And so the way these are adjudicated is that there's a population formulary for a national cemetery. And I'll do everything in my power to try and get those formularies changed.
If elected, you would be succeeding Dan Banaschek, our current congressman. Since we're talking about veterans issues, one of the things that he has been on is cleaning up the VA and holding people accountable for jobs not being done very well. Is that something else, is that a torch you want to take as well?
Well, I mean, the question gets into is systemically, what is the best way to deliver veterans' health care system? And I think, you know, when you start talking to veterans that may be living in, we had discussions over in Munising on having to drive hundreds of miles to Iron Mountain to get health care. We've had those same discussions going on in Wolverine or Onaway, driving all the way to Saginaw. I think that there should be a very thoughtful look at trying to allow veterans to get and access more care in their communities. They did the first step on that, allowing for a handful of veterans to be able to get that. But the area that we've got to take a look at is that there are certainly some specialty cases that need to get taken care of from a VA hospital. I respect that, and they do a very good job. The challenge gets into is what do you do about the hundreds of miles that these men and women have to drive to access simple health care? And we've got great health care in our area, and it seems like it would be much more logical to do that in a situation where you could go a few miles down the road versus hundreds.
Certainly. All right, let's switch the arena here and talk about jobs in the economy. One thing I wasn't aware of until you told me was that you were influential in getting the MTech Smart Zone set up, at least a part of that.
In my previous job in the Michigan House and Senate, I had the privilege of chairing the Commerce Committee. And so the Smart Zones went through the committee that I chaired and wanted to make sure that rural Michigan got those shots. And what we always find is that I like to say there's a statement, there's more than hicks and sticks north of Highway 46. And so we've got to make sure that as this develops, the people are in Washington listening about upper Michigan. And when you look at the next generation of jobs, it's hard for us to fathom. And, you know, as we talked, Rick, about the technology and the advances that are going in so many of our colleges and universities, how do you prepare for the next generation of jobs? And the influences overseas, the competition that is coming worldwide now, it's not just by a state or it's not just by a region. What we have to do is come up with a federal tax policy that is available to help entrepreneurs. You know, if you think through sort of what the next jobs are going to be like, it's hard to fathom. But we do know that entrepreneurs locate where there's fair flat taxes. We do know that they locate where a regulatory environment is fair and level. You don't have to go through a lot of bureaucracy. And so my hope is that as a congressman, we are able to reduce the federal bureaucracy, reduce the structural challenges of the IRS, and get that to a simple form that small businesses can fill out and don't have to spend thousands of dollars to have their taxes prepared. And then also to be able to be competitive worldwide, making sure that as trade moves forward, whether it's being in forest products, whether it's being in minerals, whether it's being in manufacturing, that we are able to compete on a worldwide basis because we have the hardest working people, we have great intellectual property. But often the trade, often the bureaucracy, often the taxes drive businesses out of this region and out of this nation.
It becomes a bit of a tightrope in that up here in this area, I believe we've got sort of like prime real estate in so many ways for, you know, growing business,
yeah,
for especially the high-tech hub. We've got what seems, you know, seemingly limitless land, mm-hmm, certainly an employment base that, you
know, look at the intellectual designs that are going on, mm-hmm, here, you know, all the research and these young engineers. I mean, we had the privilege over the years of interfacing with so many of these young men and women, you know, NASA taking, you know, some of the brightest and the best, some of the top engineering companies. But how do you get the engineering companies, how do you get the entrepreneurs to stay here versus going throughout the United States?
Right. And as a, you know, a congressman, we want to provide those, you want to be able to provide, sure, those opportunities without doing too much.
Right.
And then picking who wins and who loses.
Right.
I mean, I think with even without the government's intervention, this would make this area should be, it, mm-hmm, should be hard to keep people out of this,
correct,
area wanting to, you,
right,
know, especially in the high tech field.
Right.
But then, you know, as somebody that would be sitting on a chair or committee in Congress, you can't do too much in order to see that.
I mean, the issue you've got to look at it is that you want to make sure that the United States of America is the best place to do business in this world. And so when you start looking at capital gains issues, when you start looking at the regulatory issues, it is becoming challenging for companies to grow and prosper here. And so we have to create a playing field when they're making decisions to locate. Why do you come to Houghton? And when you're on an international footing and you can be any place in the world, you've got to make the United States one of the places that they're going to consider the best place.
What separates you from your opponent for the primary, mm-hmm, Tom Casperson? You're both Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Tom is from the Upper Peninsula. We know him real well up, mm-hmm, here. We're familiar with your work as well, and you're no stranger to the UP, obviously.
Right.
But what would, you know, if people were looking at you both as two completely different candidates, what separates you?
Number one is I'm a conservative, and I can do things like signing the Taxpayers Pledge on ATR, which is the Americans for Tax Reform, and can sign that because I haven't voted for tax increases. I'm a conservative. My job is to make sure that we have a business climate. My job is to make sure that we have labor standards because of choice. We can do things with right to work. I'm a conservative that will make sure that we have a way that small businesses can prosper and grow.
I've talked to Tom Casperson. He will say he's a conservative as well. So what separates you?
Look at his, I would encourage people to look at everybody's voting records.
Okay.
And I am a conservative.
All right. We've established that. In this area, we oftentimes, two forces come together.
Sure.
Progress and environment.
Right.
We want to preserve our, mm-hmm, certainly Lake Superior, but then, of course, our pristine, okay, environment here with the lakes, our rivers, our forest. Mm-hmm. We want to see, you know, certainly jobs coming to this area, but not at the expense of where,
sure,
we live. Talk about where you feel about those things.
Well, it was very helpful. In the summer of 14, we took our family to Isle Royale. And so we left here out of Houghton and took the Ranger and spent a week in Isle Royale and came back. And, you know, to me, the grand, the beauty of the Keweenaw was just amazing to see from the coastline. because I hadn't been back since my Boy Scout troop hiked in the mid-70s over to Isle Royale. And they gave us a perspective of the beauty and this sort of rugged area. I think the challenge that you've got to take a look at it is then from a regulatory environment, how do you decide that you're going to do additional exploration and mining in these communities versus being in South America, being in Australia? So you've got to come up with a safe, fair regulatory environment for mineral exploration. Now, when I did the mineral exploration bills in the legislature, I think we struck a good balance on that. But there is a lot of federal environmental standards. And I want to make sure that we have a pure, clean environment, but we are allowing for exploration. We are allowing for the free flow of minerals out of the Upper Peninsula versus having those coming in from other countries. Then when you look at intellectual property, and as we talked about earlier, the research and development that is going on at Michigan Tech or at Northern or at the Alpena Community College with its drone studies are invaluable. But we've got to make sure that those patents and that intellectual property is not raided by overseas companies and they're protected. And so we've got to continue that entrepreneur spirit of investing in small businesses, investing in individuals that are going to start jobs and create jobs in our region. And part of that is just protecting the data and the research that's going on.
Do you think that you would be able to sit down with members of the conservation groups, whether it's members from the tribal community here locally, and talk about these issues and work out solutions?
You know, relationships are key. And when you have the discussions, it is a challenge because sometimes people come with an agenda, but I feel I have the skill set to be able to work across a variety of differences and have solid discussions, and that's been always a strength of me.
Fed a Canadian company in the area looking at different mining projects, Highland Copper Company, and there's three separate projects not far from here. Some of them, Keweenaw, the White Pine North, and the Copperwood project that they're looking at. And the price of copper that has been dropping dramatically has put, you know, at least the future of those mines in question.
Well, you saw the world change, you know, with some of the challenges that are going on over in Australia. You had the recent issues going on down in Brazil. You know, and then you've got the Chinese, you know, literally dumping certain types of commodities. So the commodity market is very challenged because of surplus. You know, we're seeing that in the steel industry as we speak. And, you know, and then the manipulation. And you've also got the unique challenges with the Canadian currency undervalued right now.
A couple of issues that seem that they fall in your district, and though they seem like state issues, they undoubtedly fall into the, you know, federal control. One of them is our wolf population because it's a nationally, federally endangered species. A lot of people just want to hunt the darn things and get, you know, and what's your take on them?
Well, I our deer camp's down near Covington, so we've already experienced wolves and over the years that we've been in there and hunting and take it off the endangered species list.
Okay. Not worrying about dwindling numbers and taking up too many?
I think, you know, when you start talking to the farmers, to the hunting community, you know, we've got an abundance of them right now.
got plenty of them. but there are some that are very fanatical about protecting the wolf population. You hear things like, well, we choose to live here, and that's where the wolves are. And so, you know, we sort of should just deal with that, you know, that they're back to be wolves here. But, you know, if we're going to be hunting deer and we're going to be hunting raccoon, well, then why would we protect one animal and certainly not the other?
And Rick, thank you, and I appreciate that. You know, there's laws in place that have been working on this, and just allow those to move forward.
Okay, so we know where you'll vote on that, on the wolves. Going through the Straits of Mackinac is a pipeline, and there's some misconceptions about this pipeline and that it's not a heavy crude pipeline, but yet there's been enough things that have happened that it makes any kind of oil pipeline scary, and there's been I call them doomsday sort of predictions of what would happen if this thing were to burst open, like the one down in the Gulf or something. I mean, that's what people remember. They remember the Kalamazoo River. Yeah. You know, it's not too far-fetched in that it has happened. Sure. Nobody would have predicted the Horizons oil drill site to do what it did. So the call goes from shutting it down completely to other forms of regulating it and making sure it's safe or response situations in case there is a problem.
Well, I mean, the issue you've got to remember is that those caverns near Kalkaska, and that is where a large field is where they store natural gas for the wintertime. And the supply of natural gas that comes through the pipeline for northern Michigan, upper Michigan, is very, very dramatic. And so we've got to make sure whatever decision is for the long term on the sustainability is how are you going to get energy back and forth between the upper and lower peninsulas. I'm very concerned about the pipeline. I want to make sure that it's safe and that we are going to have to, over the long term, come up with some other alternatives. And I think we've got to be very, very diligent on oversight right now until we can come up with those solutions.
Are there parallels between how people feel about the Enbridge Line 5 pipeline to the Keystone pipeline, where it's just the word pipeline and people just want to run away from it?
I think the concern is more about the preservation of the Great Lakes. And I think that crosses a variety of different interests because of the purity of our Great Lakes. And we want to make sure that they're safe. We want to make sure that if a disaster, that this cannot become a disaster.
Let's talk about our schools. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have some of the best schools here, certainly in the state. My daughter goes to a school here, and I'd say it's one of the best ones in the country, but, you know, I'm biased. She's doing really well in
this
school.
That's wonderful, Rick. That's really good. How old's your daughter?
She's 16 years old, going on 17.
Very good. You know, so is she going to be a techie?
She wants to go to tech. Yeah.
Wonderful. That's great.
So as far as what she'll study, we're still talking about that. I'm hoping she'll do something wise there. We want to be able to keep these students that graduate from school here with the skills, and they're learning robotics, they're learning computer science, a lot of things here and producing for us here in Michigan. But we also want to provide them the best opportunities that they can have. These schools are in your district. You got great schools in northern Michigan as well. Just talking about our kids and and what they mean to our future.
Well, I think, you know, as we look at the next generation, one of the big concerns that I have about the upper district is that a third of the population is over the age of 55. And so if we're going to see growth for employment, we are going to have to attract and retain youth into our region. And that runs from any place from Alpena or Harrisville or Ludington all the way up to Ironwood. And that seems to be a reoccurring theme. Now, the question gets into is on self-determination. What works here may be different than what works in Rudyard, which may be different than what works in Posen. I get that. So the first thing is then, do we really need a Department of Education? Can that be better done through state resources? Can the regulatory environment coming in from Washington with all the reporting requirements, with all the bureaucracy that needs to go, why is the Department of Education, what is it doing? So we have to take a serious look, because when I sit down and talk to people that are doing, you know, construction businesses, they're struggling to find welders and pipe fitters. I know that in the automotive industry, there's a shortage of skilled trades. And so we really have to examine where we are headed as an education. And, you know, why is Washington telling what works in Houghton from Washington, D.C.?
We've got about a minute and a half to go. And since you'll be, you know, if you your primary and then the general election are going to fall, you know, right in lines with the presidential primary and presidential election going on here. I'm assuming you're not a Bernie Sanders supporter. But can you talk about your thoughts of what you're seeing on the campaign trail?
Well, what I'm seeing on the campaign trail is a very divergent set of views on within the Republican ticket. And we have, I've talked to people that are all in for Donald Trump, John Kasich, George Bush, Rubio.
Jeb Bush, Rubio.
I mean, all of the candidates I've talked with. And it's going to be exciting. We have the Michigan primary March 8th. And so it'll be interesting to see who comes to the Upper Peninsula, who comes to Upper Michigan. And it'll be an exciting time to sort of watch this unfold. I mean, certainly we've got to get through South Carolina, and what they finally call to is the SEC primaries, and then they're coming here.
So do you have a candidate in mind that's like yours? They're not going to, can I get you an endorse?
I was a Scott Walker guy, and Walker fell out. He's an Eagle Scout too, and I really liked what he did in Wisconsin. And since then, I haven't really gotten into picking my favorite. I look forward to seeing, this process move forward.
Thank you so much for your time and for your candidacy and sitting down and talking with me.
It's been very much a privilege. And if you need any more information, it's jasonallen.com.
Thank you. Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.